Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Immigration to the Cape and Islands began with European settlers in the late 15th century and continues today with immigration from all over the globe. We start the hour with a conversation about the Brazilian community on Martha's Vineyard. The Martha's Vineyard Times has a continuing series on Brazilian immigration and how it's transforming the island. With us, Martha's Vineyard Times publisher and journalist Charlie Sennett. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, how are you? Good
Great.
To see you.
Also with us is the reporter for the series, Paula Mudra. She joins us from Boston. Hi, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Good. All right, so the Martha's Vineyard Times has provided coverage of the Brazilian community in the past, including Brazilian voices, pieces, and a section of the news from and for the Brazilian community. Charlie, what got you and others at the Times thinking about a special series about the Brazilian community on the Vineyard, and how is this series different from the past coverage?
Yeah, I think that what I realized when we came in with new ownership, right? The MB Times a year ago had a new owner and Steve Bernier and a new publisher in my role. And I really wanted to just embrace this idea that we cover the year-round population of the island. That's really who we are trying to write for. That's who we think about. And that population is increasingly made up of people who emigrated from Brazil. We're at about 20% of the year-round population that is now Brazilian immigrant population, and that would be about 4,000 people out of the 20,000 year-round population. So I felt like it was just the right thing to do as the publisher to serve this audience of ours and to make sure that the information we provide about what's happening in government, what's happening with everything from the ferries to festivals to what's happening culturally on the island, particularly what's happening in the schools, education, all of that should be available to that population. So one of the first steps I took as publisher was to work to have instantaneous translation into Portuguese, the language spoken in Brazil, so that this Brazilian population could read everything we write. We did that through an AI program, a Google AI program for instantaneous translation that Paula tells me is pretty good, not perfect, but pretty good. And we worked closely with Paula early in my time to start in on this. We began with a really beautiful piece she did called Brazucada about sort of celebrating culture and nightlife right in the dead of winter with the year-round population hanging out and having fun together. And they, my understanding, if I got that word right, Paula, is that Brazucada basically means a lot of Brazilians coming together.
Yeah,
and having
exactly.
Fun.
Yeah.
So we want to cover everything like that. I think we can talk in detail about the immigration series. That was a more concerted effort to explain something so many of us wonder, which is sort of like, how did this happen? Like, when did it start? How did we end up with 20% of the island's year-round population being immigrants from Brazil? And I don't want to steal Paula's thunder because she figured this out. It's her story and she can open it up and I'll help go deeper.
And before we go to her, how did you find the right journalist for this, which is Paula?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
That, like in all things in journalism, and you know this well, Mindy, it comes from being in the business for a while, having good friends and contacts. I have a tremendous colleague in my other job at the Ground Truth Project. I'm the founder and editor-in-chief of the Ground Truth Project. And we have a colleague there who is also a Brazilian immigrant, Leticia Duarte, who is an outstanding journalist. And I asked her, hey, do you know anyone who might be able to come and help us do reporting on Martha's Vineyard, on the Brazilian population? And she said, I know exactly the person. And then a partnership was born.
All right. So, Paula, the first piece in the series is a profile of the first Brazilian immigrant to come to the island. How did you figure out who that was and how difficult was it to track him down?
Yeah. So this is based on the research of another reporter and professor at California State University, Daniela Gerson. She said in her article that she spent 10 years looking for the first known Brazilian immigrant, but then my job was to check if that was true. So I started asking people in the community if they knew who was the first Brazilian immigrant. And by talking to people who were like the pioneers of this immigration, they were telling me, oh, this talk to this person, talk to this person. And finally, I was able to check, yes, nobody came before Lyndon Johnson, Pereira, and the way I did was I called his the health secretary of his hometown, like, because he had worked there in the past. So I called them and said, hey, does he still work there? And they said, no, he's retired. He worked at the city hall. So, like, I thought the people from the city hall would know. And then they said, oh, well, but I have the number, because it's so small, like, everybody knows each other. So they gave me the number of his wife, and I spoke to her and finally got to him.
So tell us a little about his story.
Yeah, so I went to Brazil to meet this man. Like, I was so curious about him. He lives in this small town called Goiabeira, which is in this very fascinating region of Brazil where it's the highest rate per capita of immigration to the US, and a lot of them are in Massachusetts. So this small town, right now, like, has these beautiful big houses where b built with the work many people did in the vineyard. For example, his house is really big and beautiful, and he told me, like, he built him a paradise, and he considers his hometown a paradise, just like people in Martha's Vineyard consider Martha's Vineyard a paradise for them.
I would throw in also, Paula, as part of your journey that was really interesting is that you're from Minas Gerais, from that part of Brazil, and you can feel it. I see it when you're talking to people when I've had a chance to be out in the field with you on the island. They're comfortable with you, and I think that had a lot to do with how you did this. You know that region. As you pointed out, you hadn't been to this more sort of rugged, remote part of this enormous state of Minas Gerais, but that you are from that region. And, I think the state is like, isn't it like the size of Spain? It's huge,
Oh
right?
wow, it's big.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's the size of Spain, and I had to take two planes to get there. and travel in a car as well. So it was very interesting because we share so much in common because of the colonization of Brazil and the food, and everybody is so welcoming, like serving you coffee, cake, cheese bread, which is very traditional Brazilian bakery product that is from Minas Gerais, the state. So we have this connection, and a lot of people have a rural background on their families, like Lyndon Johnson, who created bull cart parade. And a lot of people, like, I grew up going to the farm and riding horses just like them. So we have things in common to talk about.
So
Something I
how loved about sorry,
go
Mindy,
ahead.
to interrupt. I just one thing while you're on the horse carts and everything. A part of the reporting that I was really revealing to me as an American is that there is this tradition of sort of expansion and literally horse and wagon and a push into the interior of Brazil that is captured in the spirit of Minas Gerais, this real mineral-rich interior part of the country. And I thought that really came through in Paulo's reporting, that this is a culture that's so similar to the American culture of emigration and of movement and of looking for opportunity. And I learned in our most recent installation of the series, which is a feature on Elio, who everybody knows as the owner of Vineyard Grocer. And Elio Silva is also from Minas Gerais. And as I learned in talking with him and in doing further research, that Brazil is one of the most entrepreneurial countries in the world. This spirit, kind of like an American similar spirit of pushing westward, of looking for opportunity. I feel like that's there. We learned that Brazil has just an enormous percentage of people who either are entrepreneurs or want to be one or are on their way to taking their first steps in that direction. And they're ranked number two in the world after India for the number of entrepreneurs. And I thought that makes sense given the profiles of the people who Paula and the other reporters have found.
So, how has immigration from Brazil grown since the early 1990s, and what is drawing Brazilians to the vineyard specifically. What is it about the vineyard?
I might start just, you know what I love as a starting point is to think about Lyndon Johnson Pereira. He's born in 1963, right after the Kennedy assassination. And if Paula, if I get this right, his parents basically loved the sound of the name Lyndon.
Yes.
And so that's how you end up with Lyndon Johnson Pereira, born in 1963. And it's a tradition, as I've learned from that part of the world, to name children after American presidents. Like I have a guy who works with me from Colombia whose name is Wilson. There's other people in the series who have different presidential names. It's a thing. So when we think of, I want to think of Lyndon Johnson Pereira in 1963 at a time when Brazil would have been very rural, and to think of his early life as something where the dictatorship military junta would have been in power. And then as that military junta begins to fade, there's this decade of sort of lost opportunity, and he would have been a young man at that time. And that's when he made a move to come first to Boston and then to the vineyard, somewhat accidentally, I think. But I do think the Portuguese population and the traditions of immigration on the Cape and Islands had an awareness in Brazil that there are people who speak Portuguese in this place called Cape Cod. And that on these islands, there are even some really great job opportunities. And I think that essence of thinking of him born in the 60s, coming of age in the 80s as Brazil is going through this dramatic transformation, and as the United States is having a dramatic immigration reform at the time. The 1986 immigration reform laws were critical in opening the aperture for immigrants to come to the country. And if you remember, it shifted the burden. It said that it's up to employers to be sure that people have the correct paperwork, and that it sort of became more liberal. It's interesting that it happened under Reagan. We're in a election season where immigration policy is debated. Right. That more liberal policy was Reagan's, very effective. And I think we could all say for our economy, it worked extremely well. Yeah. To inspire immigrants to come and seek opportunity and to work hard in this country.
And Charlie, you mentioned jobs. What are some of the jobs or industries where Brazilians are finding work on the island?
Well, anything that has to do with the real inside of knowledge of the Brazilian community, I'm going to keep looking at Paola through this Zoom channel here, but also just if factually, please back me up if I get anything wrong. But they're in every job you would imagine. Certainly the service industries, restaurants, kitchens, working as waiters, working as cooks, working cleaning dishes. Other big ones are landscaping is huge. The construction industry is very big. Their skills are considerable. And also house cleaning for women is a very big and lucrative profession with a lot of interesting entrepreneurial startups in all of these sectors. I think the key feature from any of us who've gotten to have friends who are immigrants from Brazil or just getting to know the population, one of the things is just this incredible work ethic. You know, I'm Irish American, right? And I think back to like mid-19th century Boston. The Irish are flooding Boston, working hard, and just finding their place. And I literally feel this kinship with the Brazilian community on our island that come here, work so hard, they're so dedicated, and they're doing this to send a lot of money back home, but increasingly staying. And that might be something Paula could speak more to directly about these decisions to stay and what that's going to mean for them and for our island.
Yeah, it's been a change of immigration in general in the past. I think it started more or less 2015 and increased even more. It's in 2018 we've seen. It's that people are bringing their families. They want to live here. They have a community that can support them. They have churches. They have groceries. Stores like the ones owned by Elio, and they have a big community here. So, and they have this culture of immigration. I was speaking to this amazing researcher, Sueli Siqueira, and she has studied, like she tracked down the first Brazilian immigrant from that era to the U.S. And she was saying like there's this culture of immigration that immigration can solve all the problems. And they think about coming to the US because they have family here. They hear about all the things that they can achieve here. So I met a lot of first immigrants who went back to Brazil, like from the 80s and early 90s. They were still there. Like this first wave was more single men who came, made some savings and got back. But right now it's families that are they're coming m much more in numbers. And also this talking to Meiroca, who is the main community organizer, she's worried. As you see in the third part of the piece, like she's worried because so many people are going to the island, and the island has this housing limitation, and this has been hard. Although the pay is big, there's also the part
Housing
of
is
the
also
cost.
very expensive. Some islanders have expressed concerns that Brazilians are taking the jobs from islanders. Yet we hear vineyard employers are having difficulty finding enough workers. Do we have data to help us better understand what's actually happening?
I wish we had better data. I mean, it's such a good question. That is a really great question. It's kind of a question that would lie like right at the center of the immigration debate that's going on in the country right now. Like, look, we need immigrant labor. And if you have a small community like Martha's Vineyard, it's driven home that way, that there are jobs that are hard for those who own companies to fill. And those are jobs like, for example, working on landscape crews, working construction crews, working in restaurants. These positions are not getting filled, and people who own those companies are desperate to hire people. So it's hard to imagine the Brazilian population could be taking jobs away when there's such a job shortage. I mean, you put your finger right on it. I think it's a great challenge to us as we go deeper into the series to look for that data that could really underline that central point. And, this is an evolving situation, right? Like the Brazilian immigration pop, the population and the incredible benefits that come with this vibrant culture on our island and the people who work incredibly hard. They're gifted and they're just great community members, but they've been a little bit isolated. And I think one of the challenges for the island will be to understand this community better, to be more inviting to them to come in. And I think they have the opportunity to really uplift and be just an incredibly important part of our community going forward.
Right. We're talking about the continuing series on the Brazilian immigration on the vineyard by the Martha's Vineyard Times. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about the Brazilian community on Martha's Vineyard. The Martha's Vineyard Times has a continuing series on Brazilian immigration and how it's transforming the island. With us is Martha's Vineyard Times publisher and journalist Charlie Sennett and reporter for the series, Paula Morda. And 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. I want to go back to September of 2022. When we had asylum seekers from Venezuela who were flown to the island unexpectedly from Florida, and immigration, as we know, divisive politically. How is the national rhetoric around immigration influencing the conversation on the island, particularly when it comes to Brazilian immigration? I kind of think a lot of people in the country are pretty surprised how welcoming Martha's Vineyard was to those Venezuelan immigrants, right?
You know, I do think it's one of the prouder moments of the island's recent history that that when this very cynical ploy got underway with Florida's Governor DeSantis rounding up, and I think it's fair to say rounding up Venezuelan immigrants and then deceiving them about the idea that they've been offered these jobs in this wonderful liberal place called Martha's Vineyard. And then having the even further cynical step to drop them off on the tarmac unannounced, not letting any town officials know that they were going to arrive, was putting people, human beings, in the middle.
All right. I think we're having an issue with the
Can you
Zoom.
hear
Oh,
me?
there we
Is
go.
it
Now you're back.
okay?
Okay.
There was gremlins in the board. No, I was saying, I don't know where I was cut off, but I was just remarking that there was a history of this in the racist Deep South, used to take during the Civil Rights Movement and send Black families up to Hyannisport, literally, and drop them off at the Kennedy's town. as if to say, you care about civil rights, well, here, it's such a sad and I think horrible, really despicable part of our history that we have used people as political pawns in things as important as understanding a need for more rational immigration policy. No one would argue with the fact immigration isn't working in America. It's broken. Democrats are going to hurt their own chances if they don't at least recognize immigration reform is needed. And I started off reminding everyone that it was Reagan who had probably the most progressive immigration reform in the 80s that really changed things. We need that level of bipartisan spirit that got that immigration legislation done to get a new one done. So that there was nothing that really I thought both showed the cynicism of someone like DeSantis to drop off these Venezuelan immigrants and the power and the strength and the beauty of the island for welcoming them and making sure they were taken care of and making sure that they helped them to settle. And some have stayed on the island, and really, frankly, all are needed. There's such a need for work. Immigrants are welcomed. Housing is the biggest Achilles heel in this. It's
That was going to be
the
my
hardest
next
challenge.
question is the challenges, Paula, that you're finding. You're mentioning there's this great community. They have church, they have places to shop, they have, other, Brazilian immigrants here. But housing, how do they find housing?
Yeah, what I've been hearing from people is that they have to rent rooms that if they want to rent a bunk bed, it's 1500 a month. Like it, and this is considered a good price. So a lot of people are also finding houses in New Bedford, Falmouth, and other places around near the island, so they commute. And then commuting on the ferry, it's so uncertain. And also, if they need to work in a restaurant later at night, how they're going to come back. So it creates all sorts of problems. And Mayroka was telling me, like, she knew of people who were sleeping in their cars.
Yeah. So what's been the reader response to the series so far? And we should mention the series is also being published in Portuguese. I think you touched on that, Charlie. So what's reader response been?
The reader response is really strong. I think people really appreciate a chance to step back and really study the history. How did this happen? That's what I thought was the strength of Paulo's piece, was that it really explained the journey of this first ever Brazilian immigrant to Martha's Vineyard. So I think people appreciate that. We have heard no negative feedback. It's so easy online. We don't have anonymous comments on our website. Maybe that's why we're not getting the nasty stuff. But it can happen. I just haven't seen that about this series. And I've seen, and I think anyone who lives on Martha's Vineyard recognizes the really vibrant culture that the Brazilian community has brought to the island. There's great respect for their work ethic, for the way they have committed themselves to being islanders. And as Paula pointed out, we're seeing a trend where there used to be one guy came and moved back with some money in his pocket or her pocket. Now those immigrants are coming and staying increasingly. So what we're seeing is the schools are being transformed. And this is where we've gotten a lot of feedback on our writing on the Brazilian population is around the issue of schools, because the reporting showed that, okay, 20% of the year-round population are Brazilian immigrants, but it's a much higher percentage in the schools. More than 30% of the students have Portuguese as a first language in their home, which would indicate they are Brazilian immigrants. Some have that number as high as 40%. In some schools, it is the majority of the students are Brazilian immigrants. But overall in the school system, we could say about 30 plus percent, a third, are immigrants, and that's changing how children are taught on the island. And that is something that is a lightning rod issue, and it revealed itself when we began really reporting on it over the winter. We had a story which I would call making good trouble, which is there was a school committee meeting where a lot of parents from the of Brazilian students were there with their phones in their hand, and they were able to translate what the superintendent had been saying and what others had been saying about the English language learning program, the ELL program, and that it was putting an unfair burden on the schools, which was impacting the so-called high achieving students. And a parent asked, based on the reporting they had, is this true? Did somebody say this? Because why aren't the Brazilian students considered high achieving students? What does that mean that it takes away from high achievers? Really beautiful moment. I think it's exactly what a newspaper should do. Enlighten, inform, mix it up, get a conversation going, and stir some trouble. And I loved it when that parent began to talk about deepening a committee that has now been formed of Brazilian immigrant parents that have their own sort of committee that works with the schools. The superintendent of schools has been embracing the change that's happening in the schools. The school system is doing its very best, but it does put strain on the schools. And I think, like the housing issue, the schools issue is something that I think we have to stay on. And we do hear more sort of animated comments in the community about resources and what it means to have all of these students learning through the ELL program.
Yeah. So we're mentioning that it used to be maybe the men who would come, get some savings, go back to Brazil. Now we're seeing families coming and staying. So how is immigration to the U.S. and the vineyard impacting communities in Brazil?
Yeah, so what I saw there is this amazing situation where they have the people who stayed and the people who are far away. So you see how the quality of life of people who have family here is higher there, because of they send money, the remittance. They also have bigger houses to show their success, even though sometimes it's not the best investment. But you also have families that are apart and that they can, it's much better the way they can communicate now than before, but still, like, you cannot hug your mom on Mother's Day. You cannot be on the same place where, when, for example, someone is born or a wedding, sometimes you cannot be there. So one of our stories was about bridging this divide by technology, where people are connected by the news and also via social media and all that. But at the same time, when I was there, I felt like everybody who had in these towns had a family member in on the island. It was crazy. Like, I was testing everybody I spoke to. I asked if they had a family member, and they had. So they have this imagery of the island as this amazing place where people get money, but at the same time, not everybody can be together. And there were some curious moments there that I found, like a very traditional Minas Gerais bakery, and they had donuts. They also had American flag in this horse farm. And there were so many things that I thought, like, oh my God, there's such a big connection to the island here. Like, this landscaping. There was a man who opened his house for me to see his garden that he did, inspired by the beautiful landscape he did on the island. And there's also Wilson Paris, who has eagles all over his business, his house, and even in his right arm. So I thought it was it was fascinating to see this connection.
You know, it's a part of immigration in America that the communities left behind are depleted by all their talent going over to seek fortune abroad. Like that's an American story. And I was just in Ireland and I saw this painting, very famous painting that's called The American Wake. And it's a couple sitting by the fire. We call them empty nesters. And all their children have emigrated off to America and they're there alone. That's something that courses through American history. But as Paolo reported really beautifully, it's transformed by Zoom and by the feeling that you can communicate so much more easily now and in ways that you can really feel connected. You may not be at the First Communion, but you could watch the First Communion. Or you may not be at the wedding, but you could see it all being celebrated. And really there's an industry evolving around videotapes and trying to keep the communities together that way. I thought that was really interesting. But I think the drain back in Brazil, if I understood your reporting correctly, Maura, it's real. Like you were saying, families
Yes.
are separated. I was impressed by how despondent some guys I've gotten to know were about like breaking up local soccer teams back over there because all the players have come over here. But then there's real talent here, and this is a real part of the bonding in the community is playing soccer together. And this is an age-old story. This is what America is. We are a country of immigrants, and the Brazilian story is just this most recent chapter for our island in that much bigger book of immigration that is America.
Yeah, if I can highlight another point is that those towns, they lost population. Like Cuparaque lost 50%, 15, sorry, 15% of their residents, and Mantenópolis as well lost 6%. So it's hard for them to find workers to do things that people are doing in Martha's Vineyard. Like I met a guy who works for a local credit union, and he said, like, I'm trying to find someone to paint my house, but it's really hard. Like, it's hard to find people to take care of my farm for me. So this type of situation, and the schools losing so many students, they have sometimes to put classes of different ages together because it's just doesn't fit the size of the class. And some hometowns, they're so small, like they fear they are going to lose the status of being able to be called a town and go back to be a village.
We're gonna put
With technology, there's so many opportunities to bridge the communities and the classroom. Look, this is not my expertise, but I do see opportunities that are just not being utilized to do more connections between schools there and in on the island. But one thing that's pretty cool is that those small towns in Minas Gerais, they can read the news of the island every day.
In
The
Portuguese,
MB Times instantaneous translation. It's a
yeah.
little, if any of you go on the website, mbtimes.com, you'll see a small flag in the lower left screen with a drop down menu. And when you drop down, the first language is Portuguese. When you click on that, the whole paper is in Portuguese. And we know that we're hearing that these communities in Minas Gerais know so much more about what's happening on the island by being able to do that. So I think we're in a tipping point. We're in a new moment where we can really pull things together. I think education is an interesting place where more could be done to bridge these two communities together from Brazil and on the island.
We're going to post a link to the Martha's Vineyard Times continuing series at our website, capeandislands.org. Martha's Vineyard Times publisher and journalist Charlie Sennett and the reporter for the series, Paula Mordua. Thank you so much for being here and sharing that information with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.